You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Welcome, everyone, to the PFF Fantasy Podcast. I am your host, John Macri, Fantasy Analyst here at PFF, and I am once again joined by the great Kate Maju. Kate, it's Combine Week. Rookie season is in full effect. We got free agency right around the corner as well. How are you feeling right now?
I'm feeling good. We have some actual things to talk about. Now, it is Combine Week. Unfortunately, not all of the top prospects will be working out, so that actually gives us a little bit of time to dig a little bit deeper in the weeds and actually, you know, appreciate some of the low-key guys that aren't going to maybe make the main stage quite as often in the pre-draft process. So a blessing in disguise for them. But, I mean, this is a fantastical time of year. And you know why it is so fantastical? Coach speak. It is prime time coach speak season. So I thought it'd be really fun if we went through some of the news coming out of the combine this week, because we've seen plenty of it. Put a microphone in front of a coach, 6 hours after he's had a few espresso martinis, and we might get some good audio clips coming out of that. But can we buy into them for our fantasy leagues? That is what we're going to talk about today before we get into a little bit of mailbag, which I am absolutely stoked for.
Yeah, this will be a fun episode, right? Just kind of going over, like you said, some of the news and notes coming out of the combine here, getting the media access to these NFL coaches and GMs and finding some tidbits that might be, you know, relevant for fantasy season. And we got a few. We'll definitely talk about them and we'll see if they're kind of news or noise, how we feel about them heading into this year and into this offseason and draft and free agency period. It's going to be an exciting time here in the next few months as we kind of try to sort all of this stuff out. So we'll get into that. But first, I do want to let everybody know, again, to check out the PFF Mock Draft Simulator if you haven't already. It's where you can take control and draft for your favorite team or draft for the entire league, whatever you want. Trevor Sikkema and the draft team here just put together the PFF NFL draft guide, which just came out, I think, yesterday or earlier this week. They did a fantastic job on this, going through all these rookie profiles and advanced stats and strengths and weaknesses for each player as well. So utilize that. Put together your own mock, have some fun with it. It is a ton of fun to kill some time as we build up to draft season. You can also use the promo code 30MDS right now on pff.com to get 30% off an annual subscription, which includes all of that NFL draft content, which there will be a ton of continuing up until the draft and a little bit after as well. Have some fun with the mock draft simulator here at PFF. And again, that is promo code 30MDS. All right, let's start with some of the news and notes here kind of coming out of the combine. And I feel like we got to start with this one. This one comes from John Harbaugh talking about Rashad Bateman. The quote was, "The ball is going to get to him a lot more this year." So listen, I love Rashad Bateman. I think he's a talented player. I know that, you know, the initial reaction to this from most fantasy players is going to be probably disbelief, right? They're not going to buy into this. He hasn't exceeded 65 targets in a season, never more than 515 receiving yards or two touchdowns in a season. He's heading into year four now. So I get that there's going to be some hesitancy for him after hearing this comment. So Kate, where are you at with this Rashad Bateman potential hype here heading into year four? Are you buying it, or are you with pretty much everybody else and in feeling that there's going to be, you're hesitant to believe it, I guess?
News or noise? I'm going with noise. And you know why? Because we've heard this record play already. We've heard this record skipping for many seasons now. And let's be totally fair here. Rashad Bateman hasn't drawn the best of luck. He's only 24 years old. Dealt with that nagging foot injury that I do think played a huge part in the lack of breakout for him, right? Like, it was, I think, finally looking pretty healthy, especially in the second half of the season. But what I'm kind of hung up on is the fact that we didn't really see his role grow in the second half of the season. We heard before last season, you know, we want to get Rashad Bateman more involved, like, more than, you know, like three targets per game. Yeah, that'd be great. But like, I don't know that Rashad Bateman did anything in his time on the field this year to necessarily earn more targets. Maybe he gets them by default. You do have the fact that, you know, Odell Beckham Jr. hitting free agency. But even with the absence of Mark Andrews for a significant period of time as the focal point of that passing attack, didn't really see him carve out a much more significant role. Averaged just 1.05 yards per route run, 2 yards after the catch per reception, a career low, 64.1 NFL passer rating when targeted. What did he do on the field this year to earn more targets? I didn't see anything.
Yeah, I'm with you. Unfortunately, like, I want to be optimistic about Rashad Bateman. Like I said, I like him as a talent. I feel like the Ravens kind of have to be optimistic about him. They spent a first round pick on the guy. Like, they don't want to, you know, feel like that was a wasted investment or anything. But I guess it's just like, what is the expectation for him in this offense, right? So say, you know, Odell Beckham's going to be a free agent. Say that he does get that, you know, production increase, and I don't know how high that production increase is going to be. I mean, you have Zay Flowers there, who I think has established himself as the top wide receiver on the team. Mark Andrews is arguably the top receiving target on the team. You got Lamar Jackson and his rushing ability, which we know he'll scramble. Potentially adding maybe Derrick Henry as well. He's the betting favorite to go there. This was already the sixth most run-heavy team in the league last year, so how much of a ceiling does Rashad Bateman have? I feel like it's pretty capped in this offense. And just trying to be reasonable about a production increase for him, you know, say he gets 80 targets, 55 receptions, between 650, 675 receiving yards, and like three touchdowns, right? These would all be career highs for him. Then he's averaging, you know what, 11 to 12 PPR points per game, something like that, assuming he plays all 16 games, which is like wide receiver 40-ish, you know, he's still going to be just a sleeper, right? And that it probably one that would pay off if that was the outcome for him. But it's just, I have a hard time, you know, believing that it's going to be that great of an increase for Rashad Bateman. As much as I like him, I just don't know that this offense is going to be the one for him to allow him to break out, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Do you know how many career games? So for reference, Rashad Bateman has played 34 regular season games in his career. Do you know how many of those he has exceeded 20 fantasy points in half PPR scoring formats?
One?
Zero.
Zero. Okay.
He has never scored more than 20 fantasy points. He has scored more than 14 fantasy points in half PPR scoring formats once in his career. That was week two of the 2022 NFL season. Two career games with 100 plus receiving yards, four career touchdowns. Like, call a spade, time to move on, John. Time to move on. Yeah, and I'm talking to Mr. Harbaugh, not Mr. Mack.
Yeah, it's been a rough stretch here. I think there was higher expectations for him for sure coming out into the NFL, but just hasn't worked out, whether, you know, injury and the offense itself just hasn't allowed him to be that player that I think most people expected him to be if they were high on him coming out of the draft. So let's talk about another player, another former first round pick at wide receiver, and another player that there's potentially going to be some more optimism about this offseason in Detroit. Dan Campbell spoke on Jameson Williams yesterday or today, I think it was, talking about him going to push to be a full-time starter. So Jameson Williams, another guy that has kind of come along slowly, but we did at least see him take some steps in the right direction last year as far as playing time goes. We saw that kind of steady increase in playing time over the second half of the year. But he's another guy, hasn't had a 100-yard receiving game in the NFL just yet. But Josh Reynolds is slated to be a free agent this offseason. He was fourth on the team in targets last year with 75. There's room for significant improvement for Jameson Williams. I tend to believe that maybe he can take that year three leap. I don't know. How do you feel about this Jameson Williams potential here for a breakout in year three?
You tell me if I'm being a butthead with this comment. And you can totally call me a butthead because I think we know each other well enough at this point. When you cite the departure of Josh Reynolds as a potential reason that you could be earning a full-time role as a former first-round pick, am I supposed to pat you on the back for that one? Because I don't think so. I mean, I'm looking at you know, Jameson Williams. He actually ranked second on the team among the wide receivers there in that offense in terms of target rates per route run. We saw the upside, but like, it also, we didn't see him on the field often enough, which like that was kind of the big kicker. He was utilized when he was on the field, but wasn't on the field often enough. I kind of struggle with Jameson Williams because I think he's one of these players that he's almost like he's not like this player at all, but I want you to follow along with my rationale here. He's like a Kadarius Toney type where the threat of him being on the field means you have to play that defensive coverage differently because you don't know what he's going to be utilized. You don't know in the way that he's going to be utilized. He can be utilized in a million different ways, and he's got the speed. Like he forces one missed tackle in an open field and he's gone. So like he changes the way you have to play defense. Is he an every down guy? Because I think they've pretty much established here their every down guys are Amon-Ra St. Brown and Sam Laporta. And I don't really see it being all that different. You also have, you know, Jahmyr Gibbs totally involved as a receiver. I'm not buying this one. And he's probably going to be a guy that I pass on every single one of my drafts. But like Rashad Bateman, I can understand most people are probably not going to buy into that. I could see some people taking the bait on a Jameson Williams because you do see like when he has the ball in his hands, it's really electric. It just doesn't happen often enough for me to insert him into my fantasy lineups, barring an in case of emergency situation, unless things change dramatically here in the 2024 season.
Yeah. So that's kind of the thing with Jameson Williams, right? Like I think there's potential for him to be more involved and get on the field more and still not be a consistent fantasy starter, right? Like there's two ways to kind of look at this comment from Dan Campbell, right? He's going to push to be a full-time starter, which means maybe, you know, he's playing 75 to 80% of the routes every single week. Whether he's getting enough targets to be a fantasy starter and to be worth potentially, you know, drafting highly in fantasy drafts is a completely different story, right? Like you said, Amon-Ra St. Brown, Sam Laporta, even Jahmyr Gibbs took over over 70 targets, something like that last year, right? Like there's a decent amount of mouths to feed in this Detroit offense. Former 12th overall pick. So they, again, invested very heavily in Jameson Williams. So I'd imagine they'd want him to be more involved, to be more than just kind of a deep threat or a gadget player in that offense. Whether he's capable of that and staying healthy and on the field is yet to be seen here. So as much as I think that we could see a significant leap in production for Jameson Williams, I don't know that it's necessarily enough that he's going to be in fantasy lineups every single week for me, basically, is where I'm trying to get at.
I think that's a very fair point. Like, you look at the overall snap percentage for Jameson Williams, played 53% of offensive snaps last season. I could picture that going up into the 70, 80% sort of range. But like I mentioned, the, you know, among the wide receivers in this offense, ranked second in terms of targets per route run, I could picture that if he's on the field, that number goes down a bit. So maybe the snap share goes up, but he's probably going to be targeted on a similar number of his routes that I'm no, sorry, Dan, not buying. No go.
All right. So far, not buying into the coach speak here from John Harbaugh or Dan Campbell. Let's talk about some running backs and see if we can buy in here. Kevin O'Connell of the Minnesota Vikings was talking about Ty Chandler this week. He spoke pretty highly about him, kind of especially like as he closed out the year as the starter there, seemed to indicate that they feel pretty good about him as a potential starter again, just based on how he was talking about him. Again, you know, he was using him in comparison to Alexander Mattison, which, I mean, it's going to be easy to look good compared to what Alexander Mattison put out on the field last year. But how are you feeling about Ty Chandler potentially being the lead running back here for the Minnesota Vikings? It's early in the offseason. A lot can still happen. But as the roster stands right now, would you feel comfortable about Ty Chandler being a fantasy starter for you on a weekly basis?
Here's the thing. So I look at Ty Chandler and I look at his performance, let's say in comparison to a guy like Alexander Mattison. Did he outplay Alexander Mattison? Absolutely, he did. Did it end up meaning as much as you would probably hope for a guy that was holding a lead back role? I don't think it meant as much as I kind of hoped it would mean. And this is, you know, somebody who I really liked, Ty Chandler. Watching him in the preseason, I thought he was going to be a threat to Alexander Mattison, maybe a little bit sooner than you would have thought. But, you know, the floor wasn't nearly, I think, high enough for Ty Chandler for me to feel great about it. But, I mean, let's just be honest. Like, this is probably going to be a high-scoring offense. Obviously, there are questions at the quarterback position, but you look at the skill position group, and, I mean, you can't do much better from a wide receiver perspective. You can't do much better, let's say, you know, Kirk Cousins returns and he's cleared to start the season. Like, this is going to be a high-scoring offense, and if Ty Chandler is the guy, I'll probably draft him. He's probably going to end up being, you know, like an every week kind of RB2, maybe not the highest ceiling, but just based on his position in an offense that's going to run plenty of plays on offense and probably going to score a bunch of points, that's usually a running back that, like, even if they're not the sexiest, even if they're not the most efficient, like, I mean, you know, week 10 on, he was fine. 4.8 yards per carry, 3 yards after contact per attempt. Like, he played pretty decently. And even though I don't think his ceiling is that high, palatable. I'll say this coach speak is palatable.
Yeah, that's fair. And look, I think it's fine to be cautiously optimistic here with Ty Chandler, right? So the main thing, as we all know, volume is the key right here for running backs. And then it helps to be in a good offense. And what this offense is going to look like at quarterback, we don't know yet. We'll see if Kirk Cousins resigns or if he goes somewhere else, and then what they do at the position. But I think regardless, you know, they have enough weapons on offense to still be a serviceable offense and to get them into scoring position where somebody like Ty Chandler could make a difference and add touchdowns to the board as well. It'll just be interesting to see, like, right, like, it's one thing for coaches to kind of come out and express trust in a player when asked about them, right? But what they actually do in free agency and the draft to address the position is going to tell us a whole lot more about how they really feel. So Ty Chandler, like you said, relevant to, you know, some of the top running backs in the NFL or starting running backs in the NFL, not overly impressive, but compared to what is currently on the roster for the Vikings, yeah, he's probably their top guy. So I'd imagine if nothing changes for the backfield for Minnesota, that I'd feel a lot better about Alex or about Ty Chandler's. But right now, yeah, it's just more cautious optimism.
That being said, I would be really surprised if the Vikings didn't do something to address, like, they cannot go into this next season with Ty Chandler as their lead option. Like, this is just from a pure football perspective. I think the free agency group here, too rich. I think, you know, despite the fact that maybe there's not any Bijan Robinsons in this draft class, it's a relatively, you know, solid class at running back where, like, you could probably find some really good options in the third and fourth round. I think this is a tough year to be a sort of okay running back in the league, because there are going to be a lot of options for these front offices to pursue. So, like, again, cautiously optimistic, but if I had to bet my bottom dollar, is Ty Chandler actually going to be the starter in week one? I'm going to say no.
Yeah. We see these guys get replaced a lot, right? It's just the way the NFL. So I'm with you. I would not be surprised if he doesn't start the year as their top guy and they do address the position. Another team, though, who potentially sounds like they're not going to address the position, or at least not invest heavily in the position, is the Las Vegas Raiders, where general manager Tom Telesco came out and basically said that he's envisioning kind of a running back by committee approach this season. And I don't think this is really a surprise with the thought process here. This is a team that really, I don't think, is in a position to be investing in star players at running back. You could argue that even at wide receiver, somebody like Devontae Adams, who potentially a trade candidate, maybe isn't necessarily the team for him either. But depending on what happens with their quarterback situation as well, is going to tell us if they're looking to compete or not. And I could see them, you know, kind of piecing together a startable roster, but I would be surprised to see them invest heavily in the running back position. It didn't work out with Josh Jacobs last year, and they had more team success last year than they did the year of Jacobs' big breakout of 2022. So they'll probably recognize that it isn't a position of value for where they're at right now as a franchise. But how are you feeling about a running back by committee in Las Vegas? Let's assume that Zamir White is kind of the top guy for that group. I mean, I'm not overly confident that he's capable of being an every down back either. So where are you at with this Vegas running back group? If Zamir White emerges as kind of the top guy heading into the season, would you feel comfortable using him as a starter in fantasy?
Yes, actually. Like, I was kind of surprised to hear this particular bout of speak at the combine, because you looked at the way they closed out the season with Zamir White in particular. Obviously, there was kind of the season was a lost cause. But the final four games of the season where Zamir White got his starts, he was on pace for just under 1,700 scrimmage yards and only four touchdowns, of course. But let's be honest, the Raiders weren't scoring many of those. He was actually utilized pretty heavily in this offense, even as a receiver. I was very surprised with his overall usage, 20 plus carries in three of his four games as a starter, 17 plus carries in each of those games, had four plus targets in two of those four games. Like, they utilized him as an every down back. And I mean, John, like I just mentioned, like the pace numbers, like average 4.7 yards per carry. I do think that Zamir White is the kind of guy, and, you know, obviously he's had some health concerns in particular, with torn ACLs. Like, this is kind of the running back mold that I feel like, you know, a front office is probably expecting use him for his rookie contract, and they're not anticipating he's going to be a second contract guy. Why wouldn't you just utilize Zamir White when you saw his kind of efficiency to close out the season? I liked Zamir White, and for as many question marks as he, you know, had, I think, heading into the season, I don't think he did anything to necessarily lose his hold as the starting for the starting job. And like you said, they have to prioritize so many different areas. Offense, like defense, really came together. I think they're going to continue to lean into that defense, you know, in this new regime. I don't know. I'm kind of eyeballing these, you know, the Raiders in particular, because I think, you know, the way that they approach the defense, I think they're going to want to run the ball if they have the luxury to do it. And I thought Zamir White looked pretty good.
Yeah, that's fair. I like the thought process in that they definitely relied heavily on him last year, right? But I guess the way I'm thinking about Zamir White, because he's another one very similar to the kind of Ty Chandler to me, where I just wouldn't be surprised to see them add at least some more help. Like maybe not necessarily somebody more capable of being a lead back than him, but somebody that can at least maybe potentially eat into his touches a little bit more. And you look at some of the guys that were in that backfield last year after Josh Jacobs went down, it was Zamir White and then like Amir Abdullah, like 30 years old at this point, Brandon Bolden as well, right? Not guys that necessarily inspire confidence that you want to get the ball to. So I do wonder if, you know, the reason for using White so heavily was just the lack of other options at the position, or maybe they do. Maybe they do trust Zamir White as a lead back. And I could see myself drafting White, assuming again that they don't bring in like a Saquon Barkley or somebody like that, which I don't think that they're going to do. But I think he's another one that I guess I'd be kind of tempering expectations in. I could see them bringing in like maybe an Antonio Gibson or somebody like that to play more of like a receiving back down, or someone like that, basically, right? Doesn't necessarily have to be Antonio Gibson, but I think banking on White to be that volume heavy guy for an entire year, I don't know that he's necessarily capable of that, but he did show some promising signs down the stretch, which I think that part of it I do like. So he's another one, I again, that I probably just more cautiously optimistic about, I guess.
So are we officially calling BS on pretty much all of the combine conjecture here in 2024?
So far, yeah, it definitely feels like, yeah, we're not buying into any of it. Maybe something will come out in the next day or two that we end up liking a little bit more. But yeah, so far, I guess I have a hard time trusting these coach issues, and they've created these trust issues as far as I'm concerned. So but yeah, we'll have to see how it shakes out here in free agency and in the draft. And speaking of which, we'll get into that here in just a second as we get into our mailbag stuff. But quickly, a shout out from our presenting sponsor, Fabric by Gerber Life. If you have a family, then you need to get term life insurance to protect them. It's one of the smartest financial decisions you can make, and the start of the new year is the perfect time to get it done so you can focus on whatever else the year has in store for you. Fabric was designed by parents for parents to help you get a high-quality, surprisingly affordable term life insurance policy in less than 10 minutes. Fabric has flexible policies that fit your family and your budget with quality policies like $1 million in coverage for less than a dollar a day. Get your personalized quote in just minutes and then apply when it's convenient for you. It's all online and on your schedule. You can go from start to covered in less than 10 minutes with no health exam required. Join the thousands of parents who trust Fabric to protect their family. Apply today in just minutes at meetfabric.com/fantasy. That's meetfabric.com/fantasy. meetfabric.com/fantasy. Policies issued by Western Southern Life Insurance Company. Not available in certain states. Prices subject to underwriting and health questions.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
All right, Kate, let's get into some fun mailbag questions here. We're obviously heading into the combine, so rookies are going to be at the top of everyone's mind. And we're going to dive into the rookies in more detail and stuff in future episodes here. But let's start off with a question that I think there's been a bit more discussion about lately, and that is simply ask the question, Neighbors over Marvin Harrison Jr. So that's LSU's Malik Neighbors and Ohio State's Marvin Harrison Jr. There's definitely been more talk recently about Neighbors being the top wide receiver in this draft class over Marvin Harrison Jr. So Kate, what are your thoughts on this one? Because I know where I'm at with these two right now, but curious if you think there's any kind of validity to this situation. And is there a scenario where you're clearly taking Neighbors over Harrison, or vice versa, I guess, if you have them the other way around?
No. And I mean, both of these wide receivers, it does feel closer to 1A and 1B than maybe you would have expected coming into this season. But I mean, both of them very different. I'm just looking at Marvin Harrison Jr. as the most well-rounded and highest IQ wide receiver of this bunch. Now, Malik Neighbors, for everything he offers, in terms of vertical speed, explosiveness, I think Marvin Harrison gives you just as much. And I think he has a little bit of a safer floor for me when I'm projecting him to the NFL. So while I understand, like, I think the temptation here with Malik Neighbors is that in, you know, pretty much most draft classes that don't have Marvin Harrison Jr., he is going to be that top guy, bar none, no questions asked. It's just unfortunate that he's sharing the field here with Marvin Harrison Jr.
Yeah, this is, I have him the same way. I think they're clearly kind of one and two for me, but I do have Marvin Harrison as one as well. And I get it. I mean, I think if you're strictly watching, you know, 2023 tape, I think could see the argument.
You get the draw.
Yeah. You could definitely see the argument for Neighbors there, right? But for me, just as far as sample size, like you said, well-roundedness, including that 2022 season, you look at just that elite consistency from Marvin Harrison. He's been doing it now at a high level. Has that size and speed combo, not to mention, you know, that when you watch some of the throws and the passes being caught by Marvin Harrison Jr. and you compare them to balls being thrown from Jaden Daniels to Malik Neighbors, it's kind of been night and day, right? Like the Ohio State quarterback, this one thing that I did notice that kind of stood out, I think it's Kyle McCord, I think was his name. I don't watch college football. I watched the tape afterwards, but I he was fine, but a lot of the throws, I think that, you know, you'd expect to be hit in stride to allow for more of that kind of yak opportunity, they're not nearly as accurate as what Jaden Daniels was able to deliver for Malik Neighbors, right? A lot of the big play receptions from Harrison, you're seeing those throws. He kind of catches them on his hip, or they're a bit high or a bit low. He's got to come back, fight through contact when he has separation on the route as well. So those in stride receptions were kind of few and far between. It's more of a quarterback thing than a receiver thing for me. So I really thought that there was just more meat on the bone there for Marvin Harrison Jr. to deliver, especially on those big plays where he kind of loses his open status on a route because he's not getting the ball at that right moment or thrown on target this past year. So I think, you know, an upgrade to an NFL quarterback is going to make a huge difference for Marvin Harrison as well, just with everything that he's able to bring to the table. And, you know, that being said, I love Malik Neighbors, silky smooth route runner as well. For a smaller receiver too, at like 6 feet, 200 pounds, he's not easy to take down. He's electric with the ball in his hands. He's great at bouncing off contact, but I get if you want to take him over Marvin Harrison Jr. I don't have like a huge issue with it, but when given the option between the two in Dynasty specifically, I'm taking Marvin Harrison Jr. every time.
Just so safe. And I mean, like you can kind of bounce between these two, point, counterpoint. But, when you look at the level of safeness, like you had mentioned, sort of how that quarterback play can affect, especially the yards after the catchability, when you're not getting some of those like plus accurate throws, that does impact your ability to make plays after the catch. That doesn't affect your overall stats. But like when I'm looking at some of the volatility, you know, at the next level in terms of quarterback play, in terms of, you know, obviously, especially at this point, we don't know exactly where these guys are going. But I want the guy that's shown that kind of stability despite volatile, you know, more volatile targets, less accurate targets. Like, I think that translates to the NFL in such an efficient way, because you really don't know, you know, if Marvin Harrison Jr. goes to play with Kyler Murray, great. But if, you know, Kyler Murray goes down and we're playing with a backup option, I already feel more confident in his ability to adjust than I necessarily know that, you know, Malik Nabers can. And that's not to say Malik Nabers can't.
Right.
It's just that he wasn't asked to do it.
That's fair. Yeah, absolutely. I'm with you 100% there. The same listener asked the same a similar question here in Bo Nix over Drake May question mark. So personally, my ranks right now near the top of both of these positions, quarterback and wide receiver, are probably pretty chalky. But I did come out a much bigger Bo Nix fan than I thought I'd be. But it's still Drake May for me. I just loved what I saw from May, just as far as accuracy, big time throws, taking shots beyond the sticks, what he adds as a runner as well. You know, he isn't afraid to scramble, leave the pocket, add with his legs. He had nearly 1,500 rushing yards over the past two seasons as a starter. So for fantasy purposes, if he keeps that up, that's a pretty sizable advantage over someone like Bo Nix, who I also liked. But you look at the difference between the two. Nix, he's been a five-year starter across two programs now, has 117 total scramble attempts to his name with some decent rushing numbers. Not terrible, but compared to May, who had 118 scramble attempts over just the past two seasons alone, I think there's potentially more fantasy upside there with May. So I'm going with May over Nix right now. I'm curious how you feel about these two quarterbacks.
I think from a fantasy perspective, you kind of hit it like right on the head. I like May's arm a bit more. What also gives him a little bit of an edge is that greater size profile. He's got a little bit more size on Bo Nix. Both of them, I think, can be sort of dual threat rush attempts here in the league, which obviously that's kind of been the ultimate cheat code for fantasy football. And I mean, you saw it at Oregon too. I mean, you saw his ability as a rusher, you know, like Bo Nix, or sorry, you saw it at Oregon and Auburn, 38 career rushing touchdowns for Bo Nix. Like the threat is there, but I think the ability to maybe get creative in an offense and really exploit that character of rushing ability out of May, like I feel like you can build a little bit upon that more consistently and make it a part of an offensive scheme as opposed to more of an afterthought, which is what I see with Bo Nix. But I don't know. I hate going chalk. Like, I feel like we poo-pooed the combine. We went chalk with the quarterbacks. I need like some spicy takes in my life, John. Spicy. Yeah,
I'm sure we'll get there. We'll definitely get spicy. There. Like, yeah, when we do like the probably like the full position reviews, like running back and wide receiver, I'm sure we'll have some non-chalky picks. And I think at running back, I went away a little bit from the chalk, but yeah, the top of the wide receiver and quarterback positions, I'm relatively chalky there, but we'll see how it goes. But speaking of those top wide receiver prospects again, Enrique 85287628 asks, where would you draft Marvin Harrison Jr. in PPR if he ends up playing for the Cardinals? So let's say Marvin Harrison Jr. goes number four to Arizona, to make it simple. Now, Trey McBride was their top target last year. He's still there. We'd assume still going to be a decent target share for him. Hollywood Brown, now a free agent. And let's say they don't sign anyone of significance in free agency. Let's also assume Kyler Murray gets a full healthy season and starts 16, 17 games. Where do you see yourself taking a Marvin Harrison Jr. in PPR fantasy drafts this season? And does it change anything for you dynasty wise for better or for worse?
Marvin Harrison Jr., like in a non-super flex, he's of course going to be the 101 in rookie drafts. Yeah. And, you know, I do think I actually feel a little bit better about being a little bit bullish on, you know, a guy like Marvin Harrison Jr. When we see the recent track record for rookies coming out and immediately producing in the NFL. Puka Nacua, wide receiver 4 in full PPR formats last year. There was no question. And, you know, like, obviously he was very efficient on the targets he received, but he also saw a lot of targets. And John, when I'm projecting a guy like Marvin Harrison Jr., who I think is already very pro ready and can step into an offense day one and assume a wide receiver 1 role, unlike, you know, like, let's say a Quentin Johnston last year, who just, you see the upside and you know it's quite high, but like you know he's not going to be a day one contributor. That's not the case with Marvin Harrison Jr. And I think there's a very realistic scenario that if he goes to the Cardinals, he could come out and have 140 to 150 targets as a rookie, and I think he could handle it. And I feel pretty good about ranking him pretty highly. I mean, I'm going to say probably putting him in like the second round. Like, let's say, you know, your first round, you have sort of the automatics, right? Your Justin Jefferson, your Christian McCaffrey, Ja'Marr Chase, Tyreek Hill, CeeDee Lamb. Then you have, you know, like the running backs, Breece Hall, Bijan. Like, I think he falls like right outside of that tier. Maybe you take Garrett Wilson, Puka Nacua, Jahmyr Gibbs, and then it might be Marvin Harrison Jr. for me.
Nice. Yeah. I mean,
am I too bold?
It's bold. It is bold. I would think it's going to end up being bold just like once like ADP starts solidifying, but I don't hate it at all. I love Marvin Harrison. I'm with you. I think he is pro ready. I think he can be that top 12 wide receiver in fantasy, potentially, you know, again, a first round pick at some point down the road here in fantasy drafts. I don't know if it'll happen as a rookie. Maybe it does here if he goes to Arizona. I think it's a nice spot for him. I'm not overly concerned about Trey McBride taking everything like he did this past year, especially you put in like an alpha wide receiver like a Marvin Harrison. So I feel like once ADP starts to kind of solidify, you assume that he's with Arizona. I'm sure he's going to be in that kind of third round range is probably where I could see him being, depending on what else Arizona does in free agency and what other teams do in free agency as well, right? Like, does Davante Adams get a quarterback upgrade? Where did Mike Evans and Michael Pittman land, right? Guys that are probably going to be in that same kind of range, late second into the third, is going to move Harrison around as well, right? So I'm with you. I could see the second round appeal for him as well in an offense where you know that he's going to be the number one wide receiver. And then, I could also see kind of the fantasy community as a whole tempering expectations as a rookie and pushing him into maybe that third round kind of area, maybe fourth, if you're really tempering. But I think he's good enough to make that impact into the second round. So I like the bold take.
I'm going to be bullish. Now, we've talked a lot about, you know, our standard fantasy leagues. I think it's time to jump into some IDP. We had some IDP questions come in. So, John, IDP question number 1, and I'm not going to weigh in on this because I'm not an ADP expert. IDP expert, that is all you, my friend. So, with a lack of elite edges and not a great linebacker core, which IDP rookie would you most bank on for fantasy purposes here in 2024? They lobbed you a name. Is it still Dallas Turner?
Yeah, so this is a good question. And to be fair, like I'm still working my way through this year's class of IDP rookies. Like I said, I don't watch college football, so I don't start my tape review until well into January. And I try to watch at least one entire season for every prospect at every position. So things could still change for me, but I do feel like from the guys that I have watched, which is a lot of the consensus top guys, the top of my ranks is going to look pretty solidified. And you might be surprised to hear that I do not have Dallas Turner as my top IDP, nor is he my top edge for this class. He's actually edge 3 for me right now, behind 2 guys that I think are going to probably be my top 2 IDP rookies in my pre-draft ranks. And that's Laiatu Latu of UCLA at 1 and Jared Verse, Florida State at 2. So I think there's definitely upside with Turner long-term out of Alabama. But as far as guys who I think are more polished right now and can make an immediate Fantasy Impact, Latu and Verse, I think, are well ahead of Turner for me as far as technique and ability goes. And I think that's going to translate to more playing time early, which is naturally going to lead to more production as well. So obviously landing spots could play a huge factor in that. But as of now, I have a lot more confidence in Latu and Verse to be kind of the immediate contributors over Turner. So yeah, that's where I'm at. We'll do three full IDP rookie preview episodes covering linebackers, edges, and safeties as well in the coming weeks. So stay tuned for more details into those players from me. But that's where I'm at right now. It's Latu, Verse, and then Turner at three right now for me.
We've got another IDP question from at the Fantasy Con. Wants to know your thoughts on defensive line, big play scoring, Dante Stills, David Ajabo, Logan Hall, or Alex Wright. What is your preference?
Yeah, so this is deep leagues here. I'm going to treat it as a dynasty question as well, because it feels like one, even though it isn't specified. It's Ojabo, then Hall, then Stills, then Wright for me. I know Ojabo, you know, he's started his career with a lot of injury issues. I'm still a believer in him as a talent, relatively. I think we'll assume he'll be healthy, which I think, you know, maybe it's a stretch for him at this point, but there's going to be decent opportunity for him off the edge for Baltimore this year to prove himself as that former second round pick, who was potentially going to be a first round pick if not for injury again. But on a team that's about to lose about 60% of their edge snaps from last year in free agency this offseason. So I'll give him one more chance among this group. And then Logan Hall, another second round pick for me, is second. Stills, I think, is fine. He'll have opportunity there in Arizona. I have more faith in him to be fine over Alex Wright, who I don't know is necessarily going to be viewed as a full-time starter, more of a rotational piece. I know he had a nice end to the season, but I think the Browns bring in somebody for that spot across from Myles Garrett, whether it's re-signing Za'Darius Smith or somebody else. So I don't know that the opportunity will necessarily be there for Wright as much.
Last but not least, I want you to pick your favorite of these guys. So three defensive players heading into a contract year. We've got Jerome Baker, Pete Warner, and Hassan Reddick, who's going to be hitting, a contract year in 2025. What are your thoughts? Are you more willing to invest in these guys when they are in a contract year with the thought that they might be playing for something a little bigger?
Yeah, I don't mind the contract year narrative. I think it works for certain players. But it among these three, like, it's definitely Reddick being the top guy for me. He's proven that he's a top edge here for a few years now across multiple teams as well. If he gets the opportunity, he's going to produce. That's just what he's done. So he's also improved his pass rush metrics over the past couple of years as well. I know that there was some talk about him potentially getting traded from the Eagles this offseason, but I think anyone trading for him is going to have a need at edge as well, in which case he's going to see those starting snaps. I'd expect him to deliver once again and push for double-digit sacks. And then I have more faith in Pete Warner than Jerome Baker at this point as well. I think he's just shown it more to be a kind of a high-end run defender and be productive. I know last year was a down year, but Jerome Baker every year has been a down year as far as tackle efficiency goes. That tends to be more sticky than guys that are overly effective as tacklers. So Jerome Baker, I have the least faith in of those three.
All right, I love it. And we have one more question to close out our mailbag. What free agent will be scoring more fantasy points on their new team in 2024 as compared to seasons prior?
Yeah, I love this question. This is a fun one here. Players who are going to land on a new team improve their fantasy production and value. So, I mean, I think one of the ones that we talked about last episode is a really interesting name, and that's Gabe Davis, wide receiver, formerly of the Buffalo Bills. Seems like he's going to go somewhere else. And obviously landing spot is going to be a big thing here, but we talked about him. You specifically called him out as a Kansas City Chief going forward. That would be, I think, a huge increase in his fantasy value. I mean, he was wide receiver 50 in PPR points per game last year around that range. So even if he's going there just as a deep threat, I think he'd be more involved and be a potential value increase there in Kansas City, obviously playing with Patrick Mahomes. Not that he was playing with a bad quarterback before, obviously, but I think he would be utilized a bit more in Kansas City. So I like that one. I mean, Yeah, I got other names here as well, but that was the one that was my favorite. I hope I didn't steal your pick there, but yeah,
go ahead. No, I'm actually going to roll with Tony Pollard, who, you know, obviously disappointed at the end of last season. I don't think he's going to return to the Dallas Cowboys. I just think they've got too many players they need to prioritize on this roster to be, you know, investing money in the running back position. But you look at his performance to close out the year, you know, weeks 11 through 18 led the league in PFF rushing grade, saw improvements in overall efficiency, yards per carry, missed forced tackle rate, yards after contact per attempt. Like, everything that we saw from Tony Pollard in the second half of the season indicated to us that what he said about feeling better and feeling like himself as a player coming back from injury starting around week 11, the stats all point to that being very, very true. So I think maybe we heard broken leg and we thought, well, bone seal, without maybe thinking about, you know, some of the other things that a broken bone impacts, like conditioning, lower leg strength, like especially for a guy that plays with the kind of burst that Tony Pollard does, I think we really discounted that. So I think regardless of where he goes, and even if he doesn't necessarily see 300 touches this season, I think we are going to see a huge bounce back in terms of efficiency for Tony Pollard, which I do think is going to translate to a lot more fantasy production and potentially some nice value here in our fantasy drafts come August.
Yeah, I love that. I would definitely like to see a bounce back from Tony Pollard for sure. Couple other names that kind of came to mind. Another one that we talked about last week as well was Marquise Brown. I just feel like the fit in Arizona, plus some injury stuff and injuries to Kyler Murray as well, it just didn't work out there. I think there's definitely potential that he could land somewhere and be a more productive fantasy asset. Okay, here's an interesting name, maybe one that's kind of off the radar a bit here, but what about Darnell Mooney? He's somebody that is coming from like a really low passing offense. He's another one of those kind of deep threat guys that was a little bit underutilized, right? We've seen flashes from him his rookie year specifically, right? Do you think Darnell Mooney is a candidate to increase his fantasy value somewhere else?
For sure. And I think Darnell Mooney is one of those guys that, like, if you're an offense in need of like some speed options, like I wouldn't mind seeing him with the Chiefs. I wouldn't mind seeing him with the Cincinnati Bengals, because I do think, you know, in terms of like a speed option, he ran a 4.38 40-yard dash, you know, coming out of Tulane. I think that Darnell Mooney offers a lot in terms of that like explosive playmaking ability. If he lands on one of these offenses that maybe has been lacking speed to this point over the past couple of seasons, I could definitely see him taking on a role. But because of that sort of splash play nature, I think that we've seen from Darnell Mooney so far, I still think like he's probably going to be relegated to a best ball format for me. Yeah. But I think the upside in the right offense could be ginormous, if not consistent.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we'd still kind of treat him as that big play kind of specialist, right? Where there's going to be some inconsistency week to week, but seeing it a little bit more on a new team, I think is definitely possible outside of Chicago. So yeah, those are kind of the names for me. Anybody else for you or
I'm tapped.
Tapped. All right, let's go. So that'll do it for this episode. I want to thank everybody for tuning in and for sending in the questions as well. That was fun. I'm sure we'll get another chance to do it again this off season. We won't have an episode next week. I'll be off, but we will be coming back with our free agent signing reactions the week after that. So that'll be fun as well. Kate, always a pleasure. Thank you very much for coming on and doing this with me. Please remind everybody where they can find more of you and your work as well.
Yeah, give me a follow on Twitter at Kate Majdzuk. That's M-A-G-D-Z-I-U-K. Writing up plenty for Behind the Steel Curtain. Come get your all your Steelers analysis there. And of course, here all the time with John on the PFF Fantasy Show. So we'll see you in a couple weeks.
Yeah, looking forward to it. Again, thank you everybody for listening. Be sure to check out the PFF draft guide as well up on the site now. Use the promo code 30MDS to get 30% off an annual subscription. Enjoy the combine, and in a couple weeks, we will see you. Until then, peace out.